Postcards from Beyond. Written and narrated by Paul Harris. Making friends with your demons. In the Holborn Art Museum in Bath, you will find an oil painting of the anchorite recluse St. Anthony by the Flemish artist Jan van der Veen. This 3rd century hermit spent years in the Egyptian desert, where he suffered violent temptations in the form of imaginary demons and erotic fantasies. In van der Veen's painting, the aged saint is shown kneeling outside a cave, clasping his hands in prayer, whilst a crouching demon nearby mimics his gestures. A lusty young woman, dressed in white, beckons him, and another older woman clutches a money bag, trying to tempt him back to the material world. Various other grotesque demons surround the monk, including one creature with a second head dripping down from its nose. After his death, St. Anthony's battles with temptation in the desert became fable. His tormented hallucinations were reinterpreted as real external demons, and with each retelling, the story became ever more dramatic and bizarre. It's no wonder that such lurid tales subsequently inspired artworks by the likes of Hieronymus Bosch and Salvador Dali. Everyone has inner demons of one sort or another. They are just another name for our neurotic tendencies, such as fear, paranoia, loneliness, passion, rage, restlessness, anxiety, and doubt. States of mind like these are reflections of our continuing struggle to come to terms with the world being the way it is and our existence within it. Battling with our demons is distressing and confusing and leads to all kinds of complexities in our lives. Our inner conflicts are also externalized and projected outward. We see them represented in the arts and in literature. We see them being played out before our eyes each evening on the television news. Learning how to deal with our inner demons is fundamental to all authentic spiritual traditions. Is it perhaps the truest meaning of the jihad or the holy war? Viewing Jan van der Veen's painting as a practicing Buddhist, I feel a strong empathy with St. Anthony's plight. In Buddhism, these demons are not, however, regarded as the dastardly emissaries of some spiteful, envious devil. Rather, they are the products of our own minds. We create the monsters of greed, hatred, and confusion ourselves. As we are personally responsible for their existence, we also, consequently, have it within our power to overcome them. Anyone who has earnestly tried to meditate will have witnessed for themselves how these demons can turn what was supposed to be a mind-calming exercise into a torrid battleground. My own earliest attempts at meditation were so riddled with dreamy, sensual fantasy that my inner world often looked like it had been painted by Salvador Dali himself. Trying manfully to resist those surreal fantasies only seemed to strengthen their hold over my mind. Understandably, this led to irritation, self-doubt, and despondency, because the perceived lack of success made me feel bad. If I did get any kind of insight during those early days, it was that the popular notion of meditation just being an escape from the real world was laughable. It was clear that these mental monsters were a real problem, and that their influence was felt in almost everything I did in life. Now, through developing sufficient mindfulness, I was becoming aware of the real damage that they were causing. Meditation is not escapism. Meditation is a reality check. If you are practicing insight meditation correctly, you are brought face to face with your demons. The whole emphasis in Vipassana is to overcome them, not through force or suppression, but by accepting their existence and watching carefully. In doing so, you come to understand how you create them, hold on to them, and keep them in being. You can't do that if you are in denial of them or believe that they should not be there. Sometimes, while we're watching the breath rise and fall, we experience boredom or a sense of guilt because we fear that we are not being productive. Sometimes we might become apprehensive just because everything goes quiet, or perhaps we experience some physical discomfort or restlessness. Trying to get away from the discomfort of these experiences, we indulge in further resistances like sexual fantasy, irritation, or doubt. As a consequence, we become aware that our minds are now overrun with more undesirable, unwholesome thoughts and painful mental feelings, the polar opposite of the lovely, quiet, serene meditation we had hoped for. This comparison between our ideal and the reality creates yet more resistance. It produces a complete misapplication of our energies as our mind is caught endlessly fighting with itself, causing bafflement, fatigue, tension, and self-loathing. In Buddhism, we call this kind of mental behavior a sankhara, which means habitual tendency or volitional tendency. The process is just like learning a foreign language or to play the piano. The more you do something, the better you get at it, until one day you discover doing it has become second nature. Our demons are deeply entrenched habits of mind. We have been developing our capacity to indulge, destroy, sleep, fret, and doubt our way out of problems for years, if not lifetimes. We have, in fact, become so adept at producing them that we barely even notice ourselves doing it. Perhaps this is why there is such a strong tradition of personifying unwholesome mental behavior as a devil that tempts and taunts us from without. We simply cannot believe that anyone would be daft enough to choose to beat themselves up in this way, but choose it we do. Our demons, like any other life form, need some kind of sustenance to survive. If it is that they are thriving, reproducing, and generally taking over, then the solution is simple: to stop feeding them. Negative habitual patterns grow stronger on all forms of resistance. Ignore them, suppress them, bully them, or hate them all you like, they all just get bigger and nastier. The desire to manipulate and control what is happening in the mind often stems from a fear that if we do nothing, then we will be overrun with undesirable thoughts. This, however, is not so. The lifeblood and oxygen of all defiling states are ignorance and self-concern. We need to cut off their supply by adopting a radically different attitude towards them. This means developing mindfulness in place of ignorance and surrender in the place of self-concern. The right approach to meditation is to begin with the intention of allowing whatever wants to come into the mind to do so. That really does mean whatever wants to come in, without giving in to judgments and comparisons about its relative value. The idea is to remain mindful and self-possessed and to watch with interest what happens, but most definitely not to interfere. Non-interference means to surrender to whatever arises and to restrain the urge to step in and take control of the situation. Mental events always occur in rapid succession. At first, it's not easy to recognize the links and connections between thoughts. Often in meditation, we simply become aware that, at some point, we fell into an unwholesome mental pattern, like daydream or worry. How or why we are locked in such thoughts is a mystery at that time. The trick is to take proper note of the disturbance, to give it an appropriate label, to restrain the urge to indulge such thinking further, and to be patient, allowing time for any unpleasant feelings to fade away naturally. As our mindfulness improves, it becomes possible to see the links between those kinds of thoughts and the underlying issues that prompted them. For example, you begin to see that you habitually enter into a daydream as a way to escape from feeling bored. With greater awareness and careful restraint, it then becomes possible to stay with that underlying sense of boredom. And when you do, you find that feeling bored is not a problem. In fact, it starts to fade away even as you watch. Do you remember those old Tom and Jerry cartoons? The cat, Tom, is frightened by the shadow on the wall of an apparently huge monster heading his way. It turns out, however, that it's a light shining on Jerry struggling around the corner, carrying an enormous piece of cheese on his head. Realizing this, Tom's attitude changes completely, and he rolls up his furry sleeves, grabs the frying pan, and starts chasing the mouse around the house all over again. Defiling states of mind only appear so dangerous or frightening because we do not look at them properly. Once we do, they start to shrink in size. The monster reverts to being what it really is, that of a mouse. A hateful thought is just a hateful thought. It cannot overpower you if you label it clearly and watch as it arises, takes hold for a moment, only to immediately pass away again. It takes time, of course, and much by the way of practice. It's inevitable that we will make mistakes along the way. But if we are willing to persist, then gradually, we begin to master our demons. Concerning the properly trained mind, Jackie James, co-founder of the House of Inner Tranquility, said this: "It's very, very revolutionized, and yet it's still the same. It's just the way you look at it has changed. The way you look at the same old junk. You're not going to get rid of those negative qualities which you find so difficult to handle. What you'll get rid of is finding them difficult to handle." It's said that when St. Anthony emerged after 20 years, holed up in a cave in the desert, people were convinced that he would have wasted away and most likely be insane after all that time alone. Instead, he emerged healthy and serene. Seeing the transient and impersonal nature of our inner demons is what frees us from their tyranny. In the end, after much trial and error, you realize that you need do nothing to make them disappear, other than paying proper, mindful attention to them without indulging them. Thus, even as they come and go, the mind remains untroubled, and as the Buddha states, seeing such, that meditator becomes gladdened. This gladness gives rise to delight, and the delighted mind generates calm. The meditator who enjoys calmness experiences bliss, and being blissful, his mind gains concentration. Our demons are built from our own deep uncertainties and ignorance about life. You cannot realize nibbana until you have first made friends with your demons. You cannot realize the non-dual while you are still divided and conflicted internally. It's as if your demons are standing guard at the gateway to enlightenment, barring entry and turning you away with promises of illusory pleasures or making you fearful and doubtful. They are constantly urging you to mistrust and ignore the reality behind appearances, ensuring that you never take that stepless step across the threshold from ignorance to understanding. It can rightly be said that overcoming your demons is the spiritual path. Once you have made friends with them, once you have seen them for what they really are, they can terrorize you no longer, and the doorway to peace and contentment is wide open.